This is Foul Players Radio, your podcast for arts, entertainment, and pop culture. Welcome. My name is Michael Spedden, your host. Every episode features fun, fascinating stories about people in the performing arts, actors, authors, dancers, writers, musicians, athletes, you name it. Folks who are center stage, backstage, on camera, or behind the scenes. Sit back and listen. Let's have some fun. Foul Players Radio is a proud production of the Foul Players Group and the official podcast of the Foul Players of Perryville.
Hey, you guys, this is Gina Shock, drummer of the Go-Go's.
Snowman here.
Hey, Mary Jo Peel here.
Hi, this is Kathy Ladman.
Hi, this is Jay Nedry from the Road Dogs.
This is A.D. Adams, and you are tuned in to Foul Players Radio with your host, Michael Spedden.
Hey, folks, Michael Spedden here. Welcome to Season 10, Episode 17 of Foul Players Radio. Tonight, we're going to talk about my old band, Orange Sheet Parade. I reconnected with two of my old bandmates over 4th of July weekend, and we got talking about a lot of things about the band, what things were like in those days, and we uncovered a recording that we had from a local radio station, 97 Underground, from January 26th of 1991. The interview was with Krista Kyle. Fritz and I were in the studio, which was up on Bel Air Road at the time. And Nat Bradley, our singer, chimed in. He actually called from the payphone at the Rage where we were performing that night. And, poor Krista, the girl was a really good sport because we were in there and we were completely weird and off the wall and everything. And she played back very, very well. She did a great job on the interview and we really had a lot of fun. She ended up coming down to see us perform that night when her shift was over. And it was a really great evening, a really great time. So I have that recording and we're going to play that with some introduction in our next segment. But before I play it, about some of the band history and some of my favorite memories of being in Orange Sheet Parade. So we'll be right back with all of these great things right after these words.
Hello, this is John Piatt,
Kevin Schmidt,
and Jerry Bozick,
and we're August, the little band from Virginia. You're listening to Michael Spedden on Foul Players Radio.
Hello, listeners. We at Foul Players Radio thank you for all of your support over the past 10 seasons and nearly 300 episodes. We would like to encourage you to keep listening and spread the word. Audio versions of all episodes can be found on our main website, foulplayersradio.com, as well as on many of the other platforms you can see here. You can find all of our Season 9 and 10 episodes, as well as some best-of episodes and shorts on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/@foulplayersradio. Be sure to hit the subscribe button to get alerts when new episodes are released. No matter what platform you choose to listen, you can help us greatly by hitting the subscribe button and giving us an honest review. You can also help us by supporting us at patreon.com/foulplayersradio or at buymeacoffee.com/foulplayerw. Your support makes it possible for us to continue to be your one-stop shop for all of your pop culture needs. Be sure to follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for new episode announcements and news and updates on all of our guests. Thank you, and enjoy this episode.
Hi, this is Bud Becker.
Hi, everybody. Dwight Weems from Gaz the Fun Band.
Hi, folks. This is Jay David.
Hey, this is Brian Damage from Kix and Rhino Bucket.
Hi, this is Kim of Kim's Crypt.
Hello, my name is Gunil Carling.
Hi, this is Paul Castiglia, and you're listening to Foul Players Radio, the one-stop shop for all your pop culture needs.
The Foul Players of Perryville will be performing their murder mystery shows on the Western Maryland Scenic Railroad August 5th, September 2nd, October 7th, and 28th. For more information, please see www.wmsr.com and www.foulplayersofperryville.com. Hope to see you there. So welcome to Season 10, Episode 17 of Foul Players Radio. Michael Spedden here. So we're going to talk tonight about Orange Sheet Parade. As I had mentioned, I had reconnected with Fritz and Sean Ziegler this past weekend. We had gotten together and hung out for a little bit and you know, talked about a lot of things, not just Orange Sheet Parade, but, you know, life in general. And it's always great to reconnect with your friends and everything. And so I wanted to talk a bit about the history of Orange Sheet Parade and what this time being in the band was like for me. And I guess this history kind of goes back to 1985. I was a what they call a rising senior in high school. And I had met Fritz through a classmate, a friend of mine from school named Carl, who played the drums. And he invited me down to play, you know, in his garage. And you know, I met Fritz, who was you know, a couple years younger, about a year or so younger than I was. And the three of us got together and jammed and had a good time and ended up forming some bands between me, Fritz, and Carl. We had a fellow named Greg O'Connor come sing with us, and we did some CYO dances and that kind of thing. And Carl Ward stayed with us for a while as well. Eventually, we, you know, Fritz and I went through a lot over the next couple of years, trying to keep a steady lineup of people, finding people that we wanted to get out there. And finally, in 87, we got together what was the roots of a band called Fritz's Dynamite. We had, we had, you know, Fritz and I, of course, and we had, a number of drummers in the band. We had Bobby Blumberg for a while, Kurt Sims, the drummer that we ended up playing, you know, doing our live shows with and everything during the time was Kenny Gosnell, also known as Taz. We had in the band Dennis Dixon. Dennis, we lost a couple of years ago. Great guy. We had Tom Clark singing with us, and we had Paul Dare on guitar as well. Fritz's Dynamite was together in mostly in 88 and 89. We performed a lot of clubs in the Baltimore area. We started off performing at the Fireside Inn on Route 40, which I believe is a Teamsters Hall right now. It's no longer a bar or a restaurant, and it's a Teamsters Hall right now. But we performed there with a group called Maniacal. We also performed there with Winter Sun one night. And we were doing a lot of backyard parties. We were doing some other places like the Old Mill Tavern. The Old Mill Tavern was down in Dundalk, right across Browning Highway from Turner Station. And it was originally a country bar, and it was run by an older gentleman and his wife. I don't recall his name. And he started booking metal bands there, and it was a lot of fun to play there. The stage, it looked like something out of an old country bar. It was like an old country Western mural, but in front of it, he had these silver streamers hanging down in front of the stage and sticking up out of the stage. It almost looked like one of the periscopes off of Yellow Submarine. It came up out of the stage, and there were all kinds of switches on there where you could control the lights and everything. So the lighting was controlled from there. And we had done a number of shows there. You know, he was very, very supportive of, you know, us, you know, the younger folks playing in our heavy bands. You know, he would walk around with a big smile on his face all the time. He had a pair of looked like chainsaw earmuffs on because he wasn't maybe not too fond of the music, but was very, very supportive of us playing there. You know, the shows did very well. And I know I've had a number of people on the show that have talked about playing there at the Old Mill. You know, it was a great place. It was a great place. And we certainly appreciate the support from that owner. Another place that we played was Feathers. Feathers Lounge was up off of Moravia Park Drive. It was downstairs from a bar called the Red Rooster. And we played there quite a bit, you know, a number of times in Fritz's Dynamite. And then there was also Maxwell's. Maxwell's was a very, you know, was Club Venus years ago. Was a lot of Motown acts used to perform there. Kind of got into dance music and rock and roll later on in the 80s. I can remember going to a lot of great shows there. Well, when I was a teenager, they had the teen nights with the Ravens and Crack the Sky and Boot Camp and the Vamps. And it eventually moved on to, you know, later on in the 80s, having bands and then having, I believe, Mystic Force, Child's Play used to perform there on Wednesdays, and they would have somebody open for them that was maybe a younger band. I think I remember seeing Vicious Wishes and Without Warning perform there. And that was usually on Wednesday nights. And You know, a couple of the other places we played, of course, The Rage. We performed at The Rage in February of 89, and that's where we met Rox Magazine. We met Sue Hodges from Rox. She gave us a little bit of a write-up that night. You know, it was our very first gig. We were very excited. You know, she came over and had some kind words for us and gave us a nice little write-up. And I know I've got that somewhere out in my archives. It was really great to have that experience with Rox. So Princess Dynamite went on through pretty much the summer and into the fall of 89 when that band kind of broke up. Fritz and I left. The rest of the members, they got a few other people and continued, I think, under the moniker Dynamite for a while. And then that kind of stopped. Fritz went moved on from Fritz's Dynamite and performed with a group called Wicked Symphony. Wicked Symphony were friends of ours. They performed actually right down the street. Cyril Charles, we knew him as Chad, was the bass player. Nat Bradley played guitar. Doug Blaker was the singer. Sean Ziegler was on drums. And we had performed together quite a bit at The Rage and at the Old Mill Tavern and a number of other places around. And the person that was managing him at the time was a guy by the name of Brian Knighton. The rest of us knew him as Axel Rotten. He ended up becoming a very well-known professional wrestler, I believe in WWE or WCW. And I can't say I'm a wrestling expert, but I do know that he had his own action figure and he was in video games and he did very, very well for a long time. Unfortunately, you know, we lost Brian about 4 or 5 years ago. It was a real shame, but he was a great guy and I really had a lot of fond memories of being friends with him. So Fritz performed with Wicked Symphony for a while. Wicked Symphony ended up ending, I think, you know, later on in the fall of 89. And, you know, Fritz called me up and we decided we wanted to do something, but we wanted to do something that was going to be a little bit different than what we were seeing out there. At this time in 89, the hair band thing was really starting to go into a decline. It wasn't as big as it was, and new sounds, you know, we started hearing a lot more from, oh, the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Primus and some of the bands from Seattle that were starting to become popular. And, you know, the hair bands, you know, the Guns N' Roses, the Faster Pussycats, the Poisons, that era, that was kind of the beginning of them starting to slow down a bit. So we decided we wanted to do something a little bit different. And we got together and put our heads together and started writing some things. And we had a number of people come down to audition. And then we heard, you know, from Bobby Blumberg, you know, he came down and we were just throwing ideas out there, kind of like taking a handful of spaghetti and throwing it against the wall and seeing what sticks. And, you know, we had a pretty good idea of what we wanted to do. Nat Bradley contacted us. We ran into him at a party and he said he wanted to try singing. So we were like, sure. You know, he came down and, you know, we ended up working with him as a singer. Eventually, we made a change at drummer. Sean Ziegler from Wicked Symphony came and joined us. And we started performing out in August of 90. Some of our very first shows were at EJ Bugs in Fells Point. I can remember a lady named Christine booked us there. And I can remember the first night we were playing there, we kept blowing the fuse box. And I remember we were getting ready to leave and I walked out to my van to start putting equipment in there. And some lady had broken into my van and she was sitting in the back seat. And from what I gather, she must have been some sort of a prostitute. I mean, she didn't look like one, but she just looked like an average, you know, middle-aged lady. And I said, "What are you doing in my van?" And she was like, "Well, you can take me home, but don't tell my husband." And I was like, "No, no, no, I'm not taking you anywhere out." And, you know, she got lost. And so we ended up, you know, packing in and leaving that night. We performed down there a couple of other times. After that, we, you know, got some other shows from people. We performed with a band called AR-15 at the Grog and Tankard. And then we eventually got back into The Rage. The Rage, my God, we were almost like Norm at Cheers at The Rage. It seemed like we were getting about 5 or 6 shows there every month.
you know, at all different times. We would get weekend spots, we would get week spots, and we really started to build a following there. We also ended up performing at Maxwell's. We ended up performing at a place called Chambers. We ended up performing at a number of other places around town. I'm just trying to, you know, the memories are starting to come back as I'm talking here, but and we started to get to, you know, the word started to spread about us and everything, and more people started to come. And then we started to put some more stage antics in. We did the crucifixion. That was pretty much something we really only did at the Rage, because the Rage had a big enough stage for us to be able to fit it in there. And we couldn't really take it anywhere else because, you know, the ceilings were too low or something. But we did that. That was our big statement on censorship, was the cross. And then we got into D.C. We started performing in D.C. Some of the places we performed in D.C., we did the 930 Club, which was just that was just an excellent show. I don't remember who we performed with that night, but it was kind of at the last minute we got this show. And we get down there for the show, and they really rolled out the red carpet for us. I mean, the owners of the 930 Club were absolutely wonderful. Playing originals at that time, we really weren't used to getting a lot of money. The bands that were making a lot of money were the ones that were the top 40 bands. They would go out and play four sets a night. Everybody's up there dancing and everything, and they're really bringing in a lot of people. You know, with performing original music, it was a lot different. You know, not that many people would come because they'd never heard of your stuff. And, you know, it's kind of that, you know, putting the cart before the horse kind of thing. Well, you know, we need to have people here, but if nobody's heard your stuff, they're not going to come. So it kind of, you know, eventually it ended up working itself out. And we did a lot better towards the end with drawing people and, you know, making a little bit more money. So performing down in D.C., I can remember one night we got booked at the Paragon. There was a fella who was interested in becoming a booking agent. So we were like, sure, let's give it a shot. We gave him a shot. Well, it turned out he booked us at the Rage and at the Rage, which was in Baltimore, downtown Baltimore. And he ended up booking us at the Paragon, which was in College Park, right outside of Washington, D.C. And so we had to drive down to the Paragon. And anybody who played at the Paragon remembers the steps from hell. You would come in the front door. I don't remember there being a back door or any easier way to get into the club. You kind of had to lug your equipment in front of everybody on the sidewalk, go up these steps, what seemed like forever, especially when you're carrying the equipment we had in those days, you know, the Ampeg SVT heads and everything, really heavy stuff. We were playing with Peking Opera that night. So basically we got to the Paragon. We got loaded in, we played our set, hung out with Peking Opera for a little while, but we had to get back up to Baltimore, and it started to snow, and it was coming down really heavy. So we had to lug our equipment out of the Paragon, and we couldn't park in front of the Paragon to make it easy. We had to lug our stuff all the way down the street and around the corner in the snow, and then we had to start driving up to Baltimore, and we were on 295. Going up there. Remember, there was no GPS in these days. The only way I knew how to go was 295, because that got us straight into the city. And but we're driving up 295, snow's coming down like crazy. Some of us were in the van with me, and the van is fishtailing and doing all kinds of crazy stuff in the snow on 295 heading up to Baltimore. And Sean was behind me in his little, I think it was a Hyundai or a Honda that he had at the time. And boy, oh boy, you know, everybody was saying they're not showing up. They're not showing up, because we had the very last set that night. Well, it was almost time. We had about 5 minutes or so before our set started. We ended up pulling into the alley behind the Rage. And back in this alley, there were rats the size of elephants back there. And, you know, every time you'd pull your car in to unload behind the Rage, you know, these giant rats would just scatter everywhere. And we, you know, got there, the door flew open. We just grabbed our stuff, threw it up on stage, no sound check and just started playing. I mean, truthfully, I think I may have left the van running in the alley with all the doors open while we did it. We were in such a rush. You know, luckily, we ended up not picking up rats or anything like that. But, you know, all's well that ends well, I guess. There was a couple of other times, you know, some other fond memories of just playing at the Rage. And I'm kind of all over the place with my memories here. Not all of this is in chronological order, but, you know, another, you know, I remember playing at least one New Year's Eve down there. That was New Year's Eve going into 91. We ended up going on at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And when we finished, we walked outside and the sun was up. that was a lot of fun. You know, we were there very, very late. People were actually sleeping in the club. You know, sitting at tables, sleeping. They were sitting on the floor, sleeping. But it ended up being a fun night. We were on a show called Rock Live. A fellow by the name of Phil Sibley, who was a photographer and had done a lot of TV work in the area. I'm not exactly sure the exact history of it, but they started filming Rock Live in, I think, 89 or maybe 90. And it was on, I remember it being on, I think it was either Channel 45 or Channel 54, right after Howard Stern. It was on late. And it featured, you know, bands from this area here. You know, they had the Child's Plays, the Mystic Forces, Last Picture Show was on there, AR-15. Those are just off the top of my head. And we were invited to be on the show, and we decided we were going to do the show at the Rage. You know, we're going to be recorded at the Rage. And so we had spent a lot of time in preparation for this show. We had written a number of new songs, and we really wanted to blow the roof off of the place and have a great show for Rock Live. As it turns out, there was a young woman, unfortunately, who was murdered. We knew, you know, part of the big crowd at the Rage were a lot of strippers. The block, Baltimore's block, which is, I guess, the red light district where all the strip clubs were, the traditional burlesque houses and everything, which were now, you know, strip clubs, was, you know, right around the corner and a block or two away. So a lot of them used to come down and, you know, they would hang out, watch a band, and then go back and do their later sets. So there was a, you know, one of the strippers that we knew, knew her. Ended up getting murdered, and the cops were questioning us about it. And they actually ended up showing up the night that we were supposed to film Rock Live. You know, we get down there, we're getting all ready, and all of a sudden homicide detectives show up, and they're like, we want to talk to you guys right now. And it turns out that I believe, you know, Nat may have known her, but there was no dating relationship from what I know or anything like that. But some people had tried to say that he was there the night that she died. From what I gather, there was a roommate that this girl had, and apparently there was an abusive relationship. And she was, I think, trying to talk the girl out of leaving the guy. And the guy ended up going over there and strangling her with a telephone cord, which was awful. And I believe after that they caught the guy, but, you know, we were questioned about it and everything. And, you know, Phil Sibley was good enough to recognize what was going on and saw that it was just not our night to do this. So he was gracious enough to postpone the shoot to another time where we could, you know, do it and be of the mindset to really put on a good show. Some of the other things I can remember, you know, also playing in Washington, D.C. at a place called the 15 Minute Club. Now, this was really a unique club, and I really love this place. Unfortunately, I don't think we got to play down there very often, maybe once or twice. The thing that I thought was really cool about it was the fact that there was a big white wall you would perform in front of, and they didn't have a traditional light show there from what I remembered. I can remember we would set up and they had these projectors, you know, up in the ceiling, and they would show videos. And so we were doing our set And our light show that night was The Fantastic Planet. It was a sci-fi cartoon that came out in the early 70s. It was really popular on shows like Night Flight, Nick at Night, that were on the USA Network back in those days. And it made for a really cool backdrop. And I really salute that place's, the uniqueness of it and the way they really took a risk by doing something like that. It was a really neat light show that we ended up having that night because they, did that. Another thing that was really interesting, it was at 15th and K. And 15th and K is a pretty notorious corner in Washington, D.C. I remember I left something in my van. I think I went out there to get my tuner. So I walked out of the front of the club and I looked outside and there were hookers. Okay. Apparently this place is notorious for the amount of hookers that are there. And I walked out and it was like every 5 or 10 feet was a hooker. And they were dressed to the nines, the fishnet stockings, the big platform shoes, the mini skirts and everything. And they were actual pimps. I mean, I thought I was on the set of a 1970s movie looking at the way these guys were dressed. They had the hats with the big feathers sticking out of them, the big furry lapels, the big fur coats. And there were limos coming up and a bunch would get out and a bunch would get in and people were coming by and just the girls were getting in the cars and very, very surreal, very surreal. I almost thought I was on the set of I thought they were filming a movie or something like that. And I'd walked into the middle of it. Some of the other things I can remember, Rocks Magazine was great to us. They gave us some very favorable reviews and some really nice write-ups. Sue Hodges, Eric Sokol, Job Jackson was somebody else who, gave us, some very great, good press, over the time we were together. 97 Underground was very supportive of us. DC 101, Kirk McEwen would play our material on, it was Local Licks. I think that was the show that you could hand in. They would play local bands material, in other words. Kirk McEwen gave us some airtime there. Krista Kyle, my God, that girl was a trooper with our weirdness in the studio, which you're going to hear in a little bit. Let me see. What else? Like I said, Sue Hodges, Eric Sokol, 96.7 was 97 Underground when they were on in the evenings. During the day, they shared it with Essex Community College, and they actually gave us some nice airplay. We also got some airplay from Niecy Williams on 99.1 WHFS. She played our stuff a bit. There was also UC Berkeley. Somehow our material ended up out there getting some airplay. It was really great, the way we were treated by a lot of people. And of course, CBGB's. CBGB's was a really fond memory of mine. We got a bunch of us together to go up for the first time. It was April 17th, 1991. April 17th of 1991, we went to New York. We got a rider van, and we got the kind that had a door between the passenger seating and the back. So we loaded a whole bunch of people in there. We had all of our gear. We had some friends of ours. We had people from the local press. I think Sue Hodges went with us. And there was a couch. And so we're driving all this way with all these people in the back of this rider truck. And we're lucky we didn't have everybody die of carbon monoxide poisoning or something. It was really something else. But we really had a great time performing up there. We got up there. The stage had a couple of dips in it where I think there were some loose boards that I almost fell into. Of course, the bathroom was the bathroom. Everybody knows about CBGB's bathroom. It was absolutely filthy. And the legendary CBGB's bathroom. It was, and we actually had a video of our performance up there. You weren't allowed to bring in any recording equipment there, but you could pay somebody to record it. So we scrounged up $35 and this guy had a camcorder And he would just walk around and he was just taking the camcorder and back and forth and up and down at different angles. Wasn't even looking through the lens, you know, but we got this really bizarre tape, which kind of worked for us. And I have it. I'm thinking if I can find a way to convert it to digital, I was going to release it on the show as well so everybody could see it. So CBGB's, you know, performed in New York a number of times. As I'd mentioned before, the 930 Club, another place in DC called Julio's. There was also Club 118, which I believe was over in Rockville. And one thing that I'll even say today, there's no good way to get to Rockville from Baltimore. It's always going to be a hike. And but that was a great show. That was, you know, towards the end of our playing. That was something that I think we got later on. We also played at a number of youth centers. There were some non-alcoholic bars that were in town. There was the Dry Dock. A couple of guys put that together. It was an old bar, and they put it together so there could be a place for youth to go that wasn't serving alcohol, and people could go hear bands. And we played there. I know Fit of Frustration, we played with them. There was, oh gosh, I'm trying to think. I could picture the people, but the names escape me. I'm sure it'll come to me later. Or, hey, if you see this and you remember some of these band names, put them in the comments. Another place that we played was Kay's Music. That was a music store on Eastern Avenue out towards the Hawthorne area. It was Eastern Avenue right before you got to Martin Marietta and Martin's Airfield and everything. And they really had a nice hall. A good sized stage in the back, and they had lights, a nice PA. And I know we had played there with Euthanasia, who ended up becoming the Martians. I know we played there with Sammy Prestiani's band. He was another rocks writer. He had a band called the Cave Slags. Oh boy. Performed there a couple of times, and that was a really great place to play too. I really enjoyed that. Great production. Another place was, there was right now there, it's a big condo and business development right on O'Donnell Street, the Natty Bow complex over there. Before all that, and this was, like I said, back in 1991, they actually had the Brewers Hall. It was called the Brewery. It was another underage place where we could play. And they had a really nice stage and a really nice hall as well. I can remember playing there at least once. And it was called the Brewery, but it was, I think, the Brewers Union or whatever the union was that represented the brewers that worked at Natty Bow in those days. It was their old hall. That was really good. Another place was the Midway Cafe, and this was earlier on. The Midway Cafe was more of a rock, classic rock venue. I think we had played there in Fritz's Dynamite, but nonetheless, you know, we ended up getting a show there. We ended up getting a show, and we played with a band called Street Legal. They were a cover band. They did a lot of the metal songs that were popular at the time. And if there was ever a venue where we should have had Blues Brothers Chicken Wire up in front of the stage, it was that one. It was more of kind of a classic rock, Lynyrd Skynyrd type crowd that used to kind of frequent there. And what we were doing just was not their cup of tea. And you can really kind of tell from the crowd reaction and everything. And I really thought we were going to need the Blues Brothers Chicken Wire in front of the stage for that one. And, you know, the owners, I think their names were Roger and Gary, were really, really super nice for us. But I think we both agreed we weren't really a good fit for that bar. But it was a great place anyhow. You know, a lot of people played there. I can remember going down and seeing a lot of local bands play down there that were really good. You know, I saw Mystic Force there a number of times. I think Child's Play. Yeah, a whole bunch of them. Some other people from that time, Joe Rinaldo, Dave Nachotsky from Invisible Sound Studios. Dave is still in the recording business, working at Stages up in Cockeysville. And Dave has been a guest on Foul Players Radio. You can see his episode on our YouTube channel and on our regular website, foulplayersradio.com. We were originally recording at Invisible Sound, at the original Invisible Sound, and that was up in Hamilton, Mayfield Avenue. And Dave wasn't our producer. It was Joe actually recorded us, and it was actually in Joe's house at the time. They ended up moving to the old Crown Cork and Seal building, where they stayed for, God, I would venture to say about 25 years. And they recently closed. I say in the last 5 years they closed. And but you know, a lot of great recording there. When we recorded there, we were I guess kind of studio mates with, let me see, the Last Picture Show recorded there. Of course, Red Dye number 9. We did a lot of a fair amount of shows with Red Dye number 9. I can remember at least The Rage a few times and the Towson Armory. Lou Maestro and Stumpy ended up leaving Red Dye number 9 and going on and playing with the Last Picture Show. Lou Maestro and the Last Picture Show recorded there, and with, I believe, Keith Nechotsky, who was Dave's brother. And as it turns out to be a small world right now, I've also done theater and with Michael Maestros and Diane Maestros, who is one of our regular Foul Players in the murder mystery group. So talk about Smaltimore. Dom Owens and Fit of Frustration also recorded at Invisible Sound, and just a lot of great memories from recording down there. That's where we did the Orange Seed Parade recordings. I think we started out with the first songs we did down there were Tony, Back from the Dead. Later on, we did Naked in the Room, Mr. Messick's Garden, Nice Day, Shattered Things. I'll have to look at that too. Those of you that have the CD know the songs and everything that we had on there. Breathing Air, of course. The thing that I'm really kind of looking back on that got me thinking was that Orange Seed Parade, we had started in late 89. It took us about 9 months to get what we wanted to have out. We got the playing lineup out, and a lot happened between August of 90 and our last show, which was February 1st of 1992. 18 months, a lot happened in 18 months. And, looking back, as it turned out, our very last show was the night we released the CD, and then we were no more after that. And sometimes you look back, me personally, you look back on things, and you've seen this meme on Facebook a lot of times. If you could go back in time, what would you tell your, 18 or 15 or 21 year old self based on what you know now? And I tell you, if I was looking back on myself, if I could sit down with myself at that age now, boy, would that guy get a lecture. That's all I'll say. But, I'm glad that Orange Seed Parade happened. I would have liked it to have been a lot more. It's as it seems, I think all of us had our own ideas about what we wanted to do. I think that, a lot of the decisions we made, we jumped the gun. I think that, if we would have, had the maturity level that we have now back then, I think things would have turned out a lot differently. But unfortunately, it is what it is. I still get a lot of people that come to me today and they remember me from back in those days. And, a lot of guests that I've had on the show that we performed shows with back in those days remember. And, it was a great time. It really was a great time, even though, I'm not crazy about how it ended, but, looking back, there's a lot of things that I think we all could have handled differently. There are a lot of ways that we all, could have treated each other differently. But overall, you know, hey, I'm extremely proud of what we did at that time. You know, it was a good 18 months for me. It was a CD, you know, material that I'm always going to be proud of until the day that I die. And just a lot of great memories, just a lot of great memories. So after Orange Seed Parade, you know, Fritz and I wanted to do something else. So we kind of came up with something. We ended up working with Will Sawchuck and Tony Warshall. They were in another band called My Dog Died. They had performed with Doug Blaker and a you know, number of other guys. And we started a band that eventually became 20 Ripped Angel. At first, it was called the Bizarre Marlin Club. And when we were doing this, it was a different band than Orange Seed Parade. You know, it was 1992. And, you know, the industrial rock thing was really starting to get into full swing. You know, Seattle was very popular at the time. When we went to write songs, you know, I was very good friends with everybody in the band, you know, myself, but, I just felt like I have nothing to contribute to this. Not that I disliked it, but, I felt like I was working in a steakhouse and I was serving spaghetti. You know, I just couldn't come up with anything that I thought would fit the music they wanted to write. So yeah, I left the band after, we were together about a year. And I think that last show was sometime in 93, maybe early 93. And then I ended up taking a hiatus from music for about a decade. So, Fritz ended up doing fairly well. He had performed with that band for a while. They changed their name to Lime. And then ended up taking a hiatus and came back with a lot of the same songs. They called the band 20 Ripped Angel, and that was Fritz, Will Sawchuck, who we unfortunately lost a couple of years ago, Cyril Charles on bass, his old Wicked Symphony bandmate, Sean Ziegler on drums, and Will's brother, the keyboard player, his last name was Rob Raybon. They had 20 Ripped Angel for a number of years, went back and recorded at Invisible Sound Studio, released a number of CDs that were good. I can remember going to CBGB's with them just to, to help out, and going to Continental in New York City. And those were good times. Those were good times. Around 2004 and 2005. So, and around that time I had started the, Uncle Moldy show with Johnny Trotta, but that's a different episode here. So, again, we found this, recording of our, interview with Krista Kyle on 97 Underground, and, give it a listen. It was a fun interview to do, from January 26th of 1991. So, without further ado, we will have our interview on 97 Underground right after these words.
This is Just Bill.
This is Rat Bastardson.
And this is Joe Poodle from Red Dye Number 9, and you are listening to Foul Players Radio.
So here we are. This is the recording of Fritz and I on 97 Underground on January 26th of 1991. And again, it was really great to connect with Fritz and Sean this past weekend. And I was glad that Fritz still had that recording. You know, he gave me a copy of the cassette and I got it hooked up. And was able to get the audio off of a 30-year-old cassette, over 30 years old. Wow. And it sounds pretty good. And so I can, some of the other memories I wanted to share real quick of that night. I can remember we got to the Rage and we loaded everything in, and then we left the Rage and headed down to 97 Underground, which was up on Bel Air Road. On the way back from Bel Air Road, 97 Underground, going back to the Rage, my van broke down. I can remember my alternator went up on the way back. So crap, here we are. So Fritz and I were actually at the corner of Baltimore Street and Patterson Park Avenue where it broke down, and we were able to get it into a parking spot. We got on a payphone and we called the basement of the Rage. There was a payphone down the basement of the Rage near the bathrooms, and there was an attendant down there. Name was Dave. We called him on the phone. He was able to grab, I think it was Fritz's girlfriend at the time, Kelly, or somebody. I think it was Kelly that ended up coming down to get us and driving us over to the Rage, and we ended up being able to perform that night. Same payphone that Nat called in on when he joined us for the interview. But that was a great place, the Rage. Like I said, that was really kind of our home base. I can remember, again, working there with John Jazz, Carl the doorman, Steve Cook, the owner, Jimmy the bartender, another bartender named Floyd. She had this really big red hair, and they called her Floyd. And so many of the bands that we played with there, and please forgive me if I leave anybody off, but I remember, Temper. I can remember BC Trash. I can remember Wisecrack. I remember Tainted Saints. I can remember Soul Gypsy. I remember, of course, Mystic Force. I can remember the Save the Rage benefit with Lillian Axe. And so many others, so many others. So enjoy the episode. You've heard enough from me. So this is RNC Parade 97 Underground with Krista Kyle, January 26, 1991. Enjoy.
97 Underground's Job It Down to the Bricks, Jet Boy, for you tonight. Slayer before that, the brand new Metal Massacre champion. Four ensemble from Slayer defeated Megadeth, Tornado of Souls. I don't know about you, but I kind of expected that. I just felt it coming, 14 minutes after 8 o'clock with Krista Kyle. Saturday night, we have RNC Parade in the studio with us. We'll be talking to them in a second. Stay tuned, coming up right after this. Ain't that the truth? 15 minutes now, I'm sorry, 16. It just clicked over just now, 16 minutes after 8 o'clock with Krista Kyle. Saturday night, we have RNC Parade in the studio with us tonight. Guys, you're going to have to get up real close, okay? and tell us who we have in the studio with us tonight from RNC Parade.
My name is Fritz.
My name's Michael.
Michael.
Yes.
You had to be different, huh?
Yes.
18 million mics in the world, You had to be Michael. Okay, so what do you guys do in the band, each of you?
I make the sounds and play guitar.
And I play bass.
You do what? You make the sounds?
Make the salads.
Pasta salad.
Make the salads?
Pasta and asparagus salad.
Is that his job with the band, to make salad?
He makes
milkshakes. I drink the milkshakes, he makes the salads.
What does everybody else do?
Nat juggles, he's our lead singer, Nat Bradley. And Sean is our drummer. And what does Sean do? He washes cars.
Okay. All right. This is definitely very... interesting. A bunch of diverse people here. All right. So we have how many? Three other people?
Oh, there's two in the band.
Four. Okay, two other people in the band. And you guys are playing down the Rage tonight?
Rage tonight. If you want to come on down, we're going to have a live crucifixion on stage.
A live what?
Crucifixion.
Of?
Crucify Nat.
You're going to crucify Nat?
Yes, on stage.
Poor guy, what'd he do?
Well, what we're doing is a demonstration of our feelings on censorship.
So poor Nat gets
the... The reason we use the cross is because back, before the time of Christ, crucifixion, it's not anything sacrilegious that we're trying to do. It's just basically crucifixion was a criminal penalty back then for people who spoke and said what they wanted to say and did what they wanted to did. If the Romans or whoever didn't agree with it, they were punished that way. And we're using a crucifixion on stage, not to be gory or gruesome or anything, just to basically show our views on it, because in this day and age, we have record store owners going to jail for selling rap albums that are, don't quite fit, what a lot of people want to hear.
So what we're trying to say is, you might as well just crucify us if you don't want to play our music and listen to our music.
So that's basically what's happened. People being blacklisted and the whole deal.
You guys have done a number of kind of on the edge kind of things in the past. Oh, I've heard. I know. I haven't, I'll admit, I have not seen anything off the wall from you guys yet. But I get the feeling I probably will at some point. But you guys make a habit of being on the edge, you know, right on the edge and doing some really crazy stuff that some bands just really truly wouldn't have the guts to do. Why do you guys do it as a habit? I mean, to be different?
You only live once. You might as well do what you really feel. Mm-hmm. You know, don't be up there scared to do what you're going to do. You know, if you want to get up there and play naked, oh, by the way, we're all naked here in the studio.
Yeah, we're all nude. We're all of us are nude.
But
a little drafty.
But why be scared to do what you want to do? There's so many bands I see are afraid to go on the edge because they're afraid what people think. You know,
and they get up there and they play and they wear what everybody else wears and they sound like everybody else. We want to do somewhere where we stand out a little bit, you know, be a little more creative, use our imagination. That's pretty much what we want to do. So many, you know, bands are so, you know, they get up there, they play, they do exactly, you know, I mean, something completely normal. We just wanted to do something, make something a little interesting for our audience, you know, make it a little...
Right. I mean, anybody can play, but if you throw the theatrics in there too, people dig you.
So do you think it's served you well up to this point?
Yes.
It's doing okay. Yeah. I don't
know. How long has Orange Seed Parade been together in its current form?
Since August.
August.
August of 1990.
Well, I didn't think you meant it. That's what I thought.
Too.
I do, yeah. So you guys have been together since for less than a year.
Less than a year, yes.
Have you seen a tremendous difference so far since the way you began and your following?
Well, people are starting to tell us we're pretty much like a cult type thing to come and see, like the movie. What's that one movie, Mike? Clockwork Orange and all them types of things, just to come see our band for that reason because of the stuff we do.
Does that bother you, that it's not for the music, it's just for the things you do?
It's for the music, too. A lot of people seem to like our songs. We notice everybody's singing along when we play, and you know, we've sold a lot of tapes so far, and we have gotten airplay on other stations. We're not going to get call letters, but, you know, we've got some.
That's right. That's, you get crucified in here. No, I'm just kidding. So where's the tape on sale? Where can we get the tape?
Oh, at Vinyl Discoveries.
Upstairs.
Upstairs at Zeke's and all the other locations. And Reptilian Records. And you can call us. Is it okay if I give a number?
Go for it.
All right, area code 301-574-7549, and we'll tell you how to get a tape.
And I'll probably be prepared for me to ask you to repeat that because people weren't sitting on the edge of their chair with a pen and paper in here. also, for those that aren't in the know, Zeke's Upstairs is Ezekiel Bleal, and it's not only here on Blair Road. If you didn't know, it's on Carroll Island Road, and isn't there not on Pulaski Highway? Pulaski Highway. So you can always get the number, call around, and find out the exact address. Since we're not gonna like give directions and all that on the air, where's what I do with it? Okay, is this the first tape of Orange Seed Parade?
Right. We'll be recording new material by spring.
Okay.
Sometime in the spring, have another tape ready for the summertime.
Okay, so kind of once it's a yearly thing, huh, for you guys? No, I'm just kidding.
That's just cheap fees are so expensive now. You know?
Yeah, we make our tapes when we change our underwear.
Oh, that's great. That's just terrific. So this is a self-titled debut tape, right?
Right.
And we're going to check out two tunes from this. We're going to let everybody give it a listen. Okay, obviously, Orange Seed Parade is one of those, it's one of those bands you hear about before you get to see, I think. So we're going to let everybody check it out, see what it's like. And, you know, if it's killer, you're going to want to go down to the Rage tonight and see them live. First song I'm going to do is, it's called Tony. Now, who does most of the writing in the band?
Basically, it's, I guess, the group effort.
A group effort.
Come up with a riff, I'll throw something in, Sean will hit the drums, and that'll start singing. It's just kind of we come up with them kind of spontaneously, and
if they're stupid, we like it. If they sound stupid and everybody hates them, we say, well, that's cool.
What does Tony have to do with, or are we just,
well,
should we just
is,
find out?
Through the eyes of a rat. Life through the eyes of a rat.
Oh, that sounds lovely. Okay, we're going to check out Life Through the Eyes of a Rat. I can hardly wait. It's called Tony. Check it out, Baltimore, 97 Underground.
Walk through
heavy metal.
8:31, Saturday night. We got a lot of things to take care of here tonight, but first thing we got to do is we have these guys back here in the studio, and we have a few more questions we'd like to ask you. I know you guys have to be on stage tonight. What time do you guys go on stage at the Ridge?
12:30, 12:45, somewhere in between there.
So you guys are going on last?
Third spot, yes.
Late night.
Late night. Sleeping all tomorrow.
That's right. Look, tomorrow's Sunday, folks. You don't need to get up for work.
Keep through the Super Bowl.
Keep Holy Sabbath Day, though. Go to church, though.
Not if they're going to go to the range and see you play. Get real.
Late night masses.
Late night masses. Uh-oh. All right. So so tell me more about Orange Sea Parade. What is the name all about, first of all?
Well, go ahead, Michael. Orange Sea Parade, we were sitting around in the shade one day, and we were practicing, and we were like, you know, we had pretty much the full band together, and we were saying, you know, what are we going to call this band? And we went through a couple ideas, and I just said Orange Sea Parade off the top of my head. We were goofing off at the time, and then we just finally, you know, slept on it for a couple of days, and we just decided to go with it.
A few nightmares.
but you felt that this kind of name would just, I mean, did...
You should have heard the first one, Buttercups and Fairy Rocks. That was a name we had for a while.
But we were going to use that when we decided Orange Sea Parade. And
well, I mean,
you always
okay.
have to repeat it three times to whoever you tell, you know, what the name of your band is. Like, what? Orange Sea Parade, what? Orange,
than, like,
what?
You know, the sword from hell, or, you know, dagger.
We wanted to be a little more...
So the response has been overwhelmingly positive.
Yes.
Towards that kind of an unusual name.
People hate us, but, you know.
People hate you. I would hope not, at least. So what kind of things do you do? Do you do all original when you play, or do you throw covers in?
We throw a few covers in. It's about 75-80% original, man.
We throw, like, some old Bowie stuff in, you know, Beatles stuff.
Bauhaus,
you know, Sisters of Mercy, stuff like that. Stupid stuff.
Stupid stuff.
Right.
So you're into stupid stuff.
Right.
All kinds.
Mike
felt stuff.
Didn't you fall through the ice today, Mike?
Mm-hmm.
We were out there off the end of my pier while they went to water, and he was out there saying, Mike, don't go out too far. You know, you're going to fall through the ice, and he fell through. So
you don't listen well, do you, Mike?
My first instinct was to run after him. But I figured, you know.
The water was only 3 feet deep.
So I threw him a cooler, and he grabbed onto the cooler.
Well, I'm glad to see that no one drowned today.
He got wet, though.
I got
his
wet.
Toes. Froze up.
Yeah, when they froze up.
We would have had two drowned rats.
Why did chisel?
Inside joke. Okay. So, what was it?
I choked on gum one time when I was little.
You what?
I choked on gum.
You choked on gum.
Choked on gum.
I'm glad you could share that one.
I had pork chops for dinner today. It was great.
Does he do this all the time?
Yeah.
Does
the gum? He choked on it, and his mom gave him the Heimlich maneuver, and the gum flew out and killed the dog.
And I puked on the pickles.
All right. We're getting a little gross here. What kind of things do you guys have coming up in the future for the band?
I'll tell you.
Lots of gigs.
Lots of shows. Tonight, it's a big family affair down at the Rage. Live Crucifixion.
With Fritz's mom.
Oh, boy.
They're going to be there, too.
They're going to be there, cussing at us, throwing eggs and stuff. So that's tonight. And then next Friday at the Rage again. Ooh, we just love that place.
And we always play the Rage a lot.
That's because it's the only place we can get our cross to fit on stage.
Places, it's like...
New club opening. It's called the Down Under at the Dry Dock. Very cool. I was down in there. It looks like a place they store dead bodies. It's great.
It's
black,
all ages
moody,
show.
All ages show. $5 at the door.
Is it just you guys or another band?
All right. I'm going to mention the other band.
That's cool. That's why I asked you.
Big Swifty.
Okay.
Revelation. Morticious. And... bit of frustration we playing with us down there. That's at the corner of Lombard and Conklin Street. Then Wednesday, February 13th, we'll be back at the Rage. Thursday, February 28th at the Rage. And then a very big alternative show, March 1st at Club K. It's 2201 Eastern Boulevard.
Behind Cage Music.
It's going to be us, Mary Suicide, and the Cage Slags. Very cool show. Very cool club.
Nice stage, nice lights.
$6 to get in. Free salads,
all ages.
Free salads, and you'll make them.
Right. They only got one bathroom, though. So, you know.
Oh, yeah, one bathroom. You have to kind of watch that.
So let me ask you. You guys would say definitely that you are alternative rather than thrash or heavy or whatever. Just alternative, different.
I'd say we have a little bit of an edge to us, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's not what you would say is, you know, you can't really categorize us in a glam category or a thrash category or a blues category or anything like that. It's
we have our own style. You just have to come see us, like tonight at the Rage.
At the Rage. And John Jazz is doing sound.
John Jazz.
John Jazz.
John Jazz. Our buddy. John Jazz.
Let's hear it for him.
John Jazz. Excellent sound, man. He's the only guy who knows what to do with it.
He's got cool tenors, too.
So John is cool. John is you know, he calls up here a lot, you know, really? Request songs and the roll call and stuff. So.
But you never request us. He's like,
John speaks highly of you, so I don't want to hear it.
I had to sleep with him for that, though.
You did, huh?
Yeah.
Shh. Okay, we're gonna check out another song here. Back from the Dead. Okay, I want to ask for explanations. We'll check out the song. What do you say, right? Okay, Baltimore, give it a listen. RMC Parade. It's called Back from the Dead, 97 Underground. Seven Underground, Back from the Dead, from RMC Parade, and okay, here we go. I know what I'm doing here. We got you guys back, and actually, we also have Nat. Nat?
Yes?
Are you with us?
Yes.
Hi, Nat.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Groovy.
And you're down there at the Rage.
Yeah, I'm down there in the basement on the payphone.
Yes, sir.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me say something. You guys, you can't hear Nat, okay? Nat, you can hear me, and you can hear them, but they
right
can't.
On.
Huh?
Right on, yeah.
Okay, just so we all understand that. All right, so, Ned, what's it looking like down the Rage? You getting ready?
Well, the people are starting to come in. The crowd's not looking too bad.
Is the door open? Door's open?
I don't know. What time is it? I mean, there's people here. I don't know why they're here, but they're here.
They're just upstairs
sitting at the table.
It's 20 of 9.
It's 20 of 9?
20 of 9.
I think it opens up at 9. But there's a lot of people here. I guess they're freeloaders. Go upstairs and get my, never mind. Anyway.
By the way, Nat's nude, too.
What?
Oh, yeah, we're all nude. We're laying downstairs naked.
Okay, Nat, you're nude, too.
Me and
John
Jazz are having a jello party.
Okay, Nat, I'm glad that you could join us, even though you missed the entire rest of this whole thing. And, Nat, do you happen to have, I was going to ask to everybody to run down numbers for us again that people can reach RMC Parade for information. Do you know it?
I don't know the number.
He doesn't know it. Yeah.
Fritz does.
All right.
Wait a minute, Nat. Go ahead.
Area code 301-574-7549.
Okay, now, if you guys, you didn't catch it, you can always call me here at the station. I'll give it to you. Nat, it was good to talk to you.
Okay.
And I'll see you tonight.
Are you coming down?
I certainly am.
Wonderful.
So I'll see you tonight. I'll see all of you tonight.
Great.
And have a great show. It was good to have all of you in the studio and out of the studio.
Put our clothes back on now.
Yeah, put your clothes back on.
Okay.
We only do interviews naked, but no, you can't wear my socks.
All right, and I'll talk to you guys, okay?
All right, see you later.
All right, see you, Nat. All right, guys, it was good to have you.
Thank you. Best
of luck, and keep in touch, and we'll definitely keep up with RNC Parade. All right, killers, we move on tonight. What do we got here? I don't even know.
And thank you again for tuning into this episode of Foul Players Radio, the Orange Seed Parade Special, Season 10, Episode 17. Again, I really enjoyed going down memory lane here. I appreciate Fritz. Thank you for getting out that old cassette of our interview from 97 Underground. It was great to run into you and Sean again. And thank you all for listening. Again, that was a great time. Just a very magical time to be playing in the 80s and 90s in this area, the Baltimore, D.C. club scene. And tune in again. Remember, all of our episodes can be found at foulplayersradio.com and on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/@foulplayersradio. Folks, this is Michael Spedden, and we will see you next time. Take care.